Can you hear me? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Right, Baruch Hashem, how do you like that? Okay, so, you know, you have a similar phenomenon during the time of the Chagim that you have during the 3 weeks, which is especially the 9 days. We always talk about whatever is going on in the calendar, and we forget that, like, there's a Parshas HaShavua. Right, you get to Yom Kippur, you know, that Shabbos between Yom Kippur and Sukkot, or that Shabbos between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. No one ever talks about Vayelach or Nitzavim or Vizos HaBracha. It's kind of ironic because we make a whole siyum, right? We make a siyum. We finished going through the Torah, but like people kind of checked out for the last three parshiyos. And the same thing happens, I feel like, with Shabbos Chazon, where we're starting Sefer Devarim, which is exciting. It's a new Sefer in Chumash, but nobody talks about Parshas Devarim because everyone's always talking about Sinas Chinam and Yerushalayim and Tisha B'Av and et cetera, et cetera. So what we do the time this morning is we're going to look at really focus on the introduction of the Netziv to Devarim. I think we'll also look at the introduction of the Ramban and see what the two of them, how the two of them characterize the Sefer. And then we'll look at a couple of examples later on in the Sefer where the themes that they identify really come to the fore. The major challenge that everyone deals with is why does Devarim have what it has in it? You know, all the mitzvos which are in Devarim, and if you want a quick list of them, Rav Hirsch, in the very beginning of his commentary to Sefer Devarim, I think it's here in Pasuk Gimel, so you can see he just lists off every single one. You see it right here. Every single one of the mitzvahs, which appear in Sefer Devarim, he goes through. He's like, here are all of the new mitzvahs, and here are all of the old mitzvahs. It's extremely thorough. Because everyone's trying to figure out, why are there mitzvahs which are being taught now, which have not appeared over the last 40 years? And conversely, why are there mitzvahs which are being repeated now? You know, nothing from Sefer Vayikra, really. We don't have very many karbanos being repeated now. So certain mitzvahs are repeated. Why the repetition and why the new mitzvahs? That is the problem that the Ramban really attacks. The Ramban has two major themes in his Hakdam. The first is this, the mitzvahs point. Why are there new mitzvahs? Why are there old mitzvahs? And then the Ramban's second piece, which I'll come back to in a minute, is he asks why all of the emphasis on all the dark points in Jewish history in Sefer Devarim, beginning with this week's Parsha, where we go through the Chet HaMeraglim, and we go through the Chet HaEgel, and we go through all of the points where B'nai Yisrael were problematic in Jewish history ever since, right, Moshe comes on. Moshe says, Mamrim HaYisem, you've been rebels from the day I met you until today. So, like, why do we have to relive all of that? Those are the two main questions that the Ramban asks. And as we'll see, the Ramban develops one approach towards Sefer Devarim. A couple of the other Mefarshim are bothered by his suggestion. And then the Netziv goes in a different direction. And both ideas, I think, are really interesting. The Ramban and the Netziv both take up the meaning of the alternative name of Sefer Devarim, which is Mishneh Torah. Right. What does Mishneh Torah mean? So, I'm giving a shiur. So why? Okay, go build a new train track. So why is Sefer? What does Mishneh Torah mean? So Ramban understands. I think the way it's classically understood, Mishneh Torah means a second Torah. The same reason that the Rambam titled his Sefer Mishneh Torah, because if you had a Tanakh and you had a Rambam, you'd be good to go. So Mishneh Torah, it's a second Torah. Why? Because there's a whole bunch of repetition. So the Ramban then asks, okay, so there's repetition. Why are there new mitzvos? So the Ramban says, well, some of the new mitzvos are thematically related to old mitzvos. Most of the mitzvos, the truth is, you go through the Rav Hirsch's list, and this fits most of what the Ramban describes, are mitzvos which are only going to be relevant once you come into Eretz Yisrael. So, for example, all the laws of a melech, in Parsha Shoftim, all the laws of war in Shoftim and Kisei, say none of those are relevant until they enter Eretz Yisrael. all the laws of the false prophet and the Mesis, the one who's enticing people to worship Avodah Zarah. None of that is relevant as long as Moshe Rabbeinu is on the scene. We do not need to have comprehensive halachos to decide how to figure out if somebody is a true prophet or not when you have Moshe Rabbeinu there. We saw that in Sefer Devarim with the story of Eldad and Medad. You can just go to, you know, Yeshua can go to Moshe and ask him directly what to do. Once Moshe leaves the scene, now we need those halachos. The halachos of Shechita, which we have in Parshas Re'eh, explicitly are not relevant until Klai Yisrael come into the land, because the way we pass them, the way Rabbi Shmuel understands the Psukim in Vayikra and Devarim, while Bnei Yisrael were in the desert and the Mishkan was next door, if you wanted to have a barbecue, you went to the Mishkan and you brought a carbon shlamim. It's only, as the pasuk says, ki yarchek mimcha hamakom, once you're distanced from the place where Hashem Shechina resides, and bringing a carbon means more than walking down the block, that the Torah says now there's going to be an allowance for eating regular meat, shchitas chulin, and all of the halachos which come with that. This covers many, many, many of the halachos. Ir hanidachas. We don't need to know about ir hanidachas before we have an ear. We're in the desert. We don't need to worry about that. So Ramban says that covers many, many, many of the mitzvos, and some of the other ones the Ramban says, you know, come up so extraordinarily rarely that it did not need to be taught until now. So for example, yibam and chalitza. You know, and I was in YU, so my chavrusa helped out in the Besdin sometimes. And it happened regularly. Every couple of months, he was asked to come help to sign a get or to, you know, do something like that. Gittin happened, unfortunately, fairly often. But there's only one time in the 3 years that we learned together that he was asked to come to be there for a chalitza. And that was, and it was like, this is like an extraordinary moment. Baruch Hashem does not happen very often. And so the Ramban says, you know, mitzvahs which happen very, very rarely. So some of those were left in Sefer Devar. Okay, so that's the Ramban's main theory on why the mitzvahs are here that are here and the mitzvahs are not here that are not here. The Ramban also assumes, by the way, and this is just interesting methodologically, interesting he asks the question, the Ramban assumes that all Taryag mitzvos were taught to Moshe at Har Sinai, whether in the original period of Matan Torah, the 40 days in Shemayim, or that whole long year where the Mishkan was standing. And according to the Ramban, the Mishkan serves as a permanent Har Sinai, right? It's like catching the lightning of Har Sinai in a bottle. And that lasts until the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar, when Bnei Yisrael leave the scene. The Ramban points out, in one pasuk you will not find in Sefer Devarim. It's the most common pasuk in the Torah. It doesn't appear in Sefer Devarim. By Daber Hashem Moshe Lemor. It doesn't show up because this is no longer the period of new legislation. That was all given to us at Har Sinai. When what was going to be put in the Chumash was put in the Chumash, right? When that was necessary to put down in Torah Shebichsav, so some of the mitzvos did not happen until Devarim. Ad kan, the Ramban's theory about that. Now, a couple of Mepharshim get very upset with this. Some of their questions are interesting. So, for example, the Radvaz, Rav David ibn Zimra, who I think was the Rebbe of Yosef Karo, and also the Rebbe of the Arizal, if I'm not mistaken, lived a very, very long life, fascinating person. Mostly lived in Egypt. Then he went to Yerushalayim, and I think the way the story goes, I believe he was 80 when the community of Yerushalayim asked him to come to serve as the head rav in Dayan. I think he agreed to do it, but they did not go through the local Ottoman authorities at the time, and he said, look, I'll come, but like I'm 80 years old, you know, I don't need tzaras. So I'll. You want me to come to Yerushalayim to serve as head of the city? I'll do it, but like, you know, this is not going to be a. I'm not interested in politics. Sure enough, politics erupted very quickly in Yerushalayim, and actually he got ratted out to the government, and he was arrested. And what they do ad hayom hazeh, you know, during the Syrian Revolution, one of the tortures they do with their prisoners is they beat their feet with a cane. So it's not a new thing. They did it through Radvaz 500 years ago, which can often leave someone crippled. The Radvaz is 80 years old. He goes through it. Somehow he comes out. Not only does he come out not crippled, he comes out. So the case is okay. You know, this whole thing did not work out. I'm going to Tzfat. I'm going to retire to Tzfat. So he goes to retire to Tzfat to live out his last few years. And then, depending on the Masorah, he either lives until 95 or he either lives until well past 100 as a very active old age, where he's living in Tzfat during the time of the massive controversy about renewing Smicha. You know, the Tzfat in the 1500s was not exactly a quiet time. So Radvaz, fascinating person, fascinating life, active from beginning to end. He has a tshuva, and he is might rival the Rashba among the Rishon Rachanim, who has the most tshuvos. And someone asks Radvaz this exact question. He says, Rabbi, how do we explain the mitzvos which are in Devarim, the mitzvos which are not in Devarim? And the Radvaz begins, he says, he quotes the Ramban's introduction. He says, I don't really like it. First of all, the Radvaz disagrees with the Ramban about the fundamental question, when did Hashem give Moshe all Tariq mitzvos? The Radvaz says, who says, just because the pasuk doesn't say Vaydaber Hashem Moshe anymore, some of these mitzvos were given to Moshe after Har Sinai. And in Sefer Devarim, these are new mitzvos, which are being given now. There's a last blast of mitzvos. Sefer Devarim is not only a last blast of Musar, it's also a last blast of mitzvos. Then he says, the Ramban said that the reason why these are only given mentioned now is because mostly they're not relevant until we enter Eretz Yisrael, or they're very rare. The Radvaz says it doesn't cover every single mitzvah. For example, I mentioned before my chavrusa who went down to the Beis Din not so infrequently to deal with a get. Mitzvah Gerushin and Kiddushin appears in Parshas Kisetze. That has nothing to do with Eretz Yisrael per se. And that is not rare. Right? Kiyikach Ishish, that happens all the time. People getting married. So the Radvaz says, I don't really think the Ramban's explanation covers all the facts. And he says, look, you just can't ask. This is a question you can't ask. You're already asking a question. What is the will of Ribbono Shel Olam? Why did Hashem give us certain mitzvos in the second year of the desert? Why did he give us certain mitzvos in the 40th year of the desert? And the Radvaz thinks you can't ask that question. Very interesting methodology. The Radvaz says, for example, we know that Hashem gave us Shabbos and Dinim before Matan Torah. Already when we were in Mara, he gave us those mitzvos. Why did Hashem feel the need to jump the gun with those mitzvos? So I would have thought the answer is because those are mitzvos which are necessary for like a basic Jewish functioning society. Shabbos and the laws of Chosh and Mishpat. The Rabbi says, we have no idea. We can't explain why Hashem decided when to give the mitzvos he gave. Now, if you go through some of his questions in the Rabban, I forgot to send out the source sheet. I apologize. I can do that afterwards if you want. Some of the objections he has are really interesting. So for example, the Rabbi says, what's a mitzvah in Sefer Devarim which has nothing to do with Eretz Yisrael, and we should have had it all 40 years in the desert? V'achalta v'savata v'erachta. The mitzvah of Birkas HaMazon, where we thank Hashem for food, should have been given to us, according to the Ramban, that all the mitzvahs we needed for the desert, basically, were given to us in Shemos Vayikra Bamidbar. We should have had the mitzvah of benching earlier. Why does it only show up in Parshas Ekev? Now, The truth is, this opens up a window into Birkas HaMazon, maybe a shiur for another couple of weeks from now. But even though normally we think of the mitzvah of benching as focusing on the food, the truth is, if you focus on the psukim focus on the land. And in fact, the halacha is that if one does not include the land in Birkas HaMazon, he's not yotzei benching. Which we do in the second bracha. No delacha Hashem Elokeinu, right? For al ha'aretz shechal to laboseinu. So some of the Radvaz's questions, right, really invite very strong responses from the Ramban. But that's the two. That's the main machlokas they have at the level of the mitzvahs, stemming from this assumption that the Ramban has that Mishnah Torah means a repetition, and once it's a repetition, we have to ask, well, why are there things here which are new? The Ramban has his idea, and the Radvaz says it doesn't cover all of them, all over 100 mitzvos, and so he thinks we just can't ask the question. The Netziv also doesn't like the Ramban, but for a very different reason. The Netziv thinks that we should have a different understanding of the term Mishnah Torah. And it doesn't just come from the Netziv, it already comes from Targum Onkelos. He quotes Targum Onkelos, I think it's in Shoftim. It says, Mishnah Torah means Pashegen Oraisa. Pashegen Oraisa, which means really a commentary on the Torah. What does it mean a commentary on the Torah? The Netziv says, don't think of this as repetition. You should think of Sefer Dvarim as going more in depth, more analytical. And in particular, says the Netziv, what Sefer Dvarim is doing is it marks the transition from the world of Torah Shebichsav to the world of Torah Shebalpeh. And you begin to have that already with the way the mitzvahs are given, more in depth, more expansive, repeating mitzvahs from before, exposing new themes. And then as you learn Hamikdavar and Sefer Dvarim, you realize that actually the Netziv is of the opinion, and he has a fascinating theory about what's happening over the course of Sefer Dvarim, that this transition is literally happening in the book itself as Moshe is leaving the scene and Yehoshua is taking over. So I'm just going to share some of the makaras that I put on the source sheet. And you'll see just some of the pesukim which the Netziv focuses on. Vayelech Moshe vayedaber es hadvarim ha'ele al kol Yisrael. So where is this? This is in Perek Lamed Aleph of Sefer Dvarim, Pasuk Aleph, the first pasuk of Parshas Vayelech. So the Netziv asks, why is Moshe going up and down talking to all of Bnei Yisrael? Moshe is talking for all of Sefer Dvarim. And miraculously, and this is the case throughout Moshe's entire career, Moshe is able to talk to Bnei Yisrael. How many times does he talk to the entire nation? Think back to Mei Meriva, where he's at the rock, and Moshe talks to all the people. 600,000 men, women, and children, no microphone, and yet somehow, miraculously, Moshe's voice is able to carry to the entire nation. Says the Netziv, as Moshe Rabbeinu gets towards the end, his miraculous ability to communicate prophecy to Bnei Yisrael begins to Eb, because we're entering the world of transition. And he documents this over the course of Vayelech and Nitzah and Hazinu and Bezos Sabracha. So he says, we're getting towards the end over here, and Moshe now can no longer stand in place. Now he begins to need to walk up and down, physically walking up and down to get his message to all of Bnei Yisrael. Later on in Parshas Vayelech, so there's a bit of a funny pasuk. Hashem says to Moshe, "Yamar Hashem Moshe, in Karvu Yamecha Lamus, you are about to die." Ra al Yehoshua behesiatzivena b'socha almoi ba'almoi ba'tzavena ve'yelach Moshe b'Yehoshua itzatzvu ba'almoi. So Moshe says, Hashem says to Moshe, "You are about to die. So bring Yehoshua here, and I'm going to command him because he's going to take over." The Netziv asks, "We know that Moshe Rabbeinu is about to die. We've mentioned that many times in the pesukim. We know that Yehoshua is not going to take over until Moshe dies." The whole first half of the pasuk here does not seem necessary. Why do we have to emphasize Moshe's death yet again before we introduce the promotion of Yehoshua? And Netziv explains, and he quotes a classic medrash, and he gives a beautiful explanation for it. You know, the medrash which says that Moshe Rabbeinu is compared to the sun, while Yehoshua is compared to the moon. And we know that Moshe's face literally radiated from his experience at Har Sinai. And we know, we can tell that, you know, to some degree, what the Medrash is explaining to us is that Yehoshua was obviously not as impressive as Moshe. At the same time, emphasizing to us that Yehoshua, as the quintessential student, his light was the reflected light of Moshe. But what exactly does it mean to have the sun and the moon? So the Netziv explains that what the Medrash is getting at is that Moshe is the ultimate representation of Torah Shebichsav. That goes without saying, doesn't need to be explained. And that is the light of the sun. Yehoshua, as the transitional personality, and I think Mefarshim flagged this. I've definitely heard Rosenzweig talk about this. The first mission in Perkei Avos, Moshe Kibel Torah Umasra Li Yehoshua, the Yehoshua Lizakinim. Yehoshua really serves as the transitional figure in the Masorah. Rosenzweig talks about this in the Rambam, when the Rambam talks about the laws of Smicha. And the Rambam seems to emphasize, the Rambam emphasizes, you know, the original biblical smicha. And he says it went back all the way to the days of Yehoshua, all the way to the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, which he doesn't seem to need to have mentioned. He could have just said that smicha, the way we usually refer to biblical smicha, is that it goes back to Moshe Rabbeinu. But the Rambam feels the need to say it went back to Yehoshua, it went back to Moshe Rabbeinu. The reason why is because Yehoshua is this major transitional figure. He is the first person who embodies purely Torah Shabbal Peh. How are we going to learn, right? That's Hashem's first message to Moshe, to Yehoshua. Yigisibo Yomim V'layla. What is Torah study going to look like in a world where you no longer have direct access to divine communication and the Torah has been fully given over to us? So the Netziv says, well, you know how the sun and the moon work? The moon can't shine until you've got a sun, until the sun sets. So Chazal point out that every time Yehoshua speaks up in the Chumash, and it only happens twice, he messes up. It happens in Parashas Kisisa, in the aftermath of the reaction to the Chet HaEgel, where remember Moshe, you know, Yeshua says he gets it wrong, right? His read on the situation is that there's a war in the camp. And Moshe tells him, you know, it's not a war, right? It's something much more insidious. The story of Eldad and Medad. Once again, Yeshua gets it wrong. He says, I throw him in jail, and Moshe Rabbeinu says, halavai, everyone had prophecy. When Yeshua is the shining, when Moshe's son is shining, that is not yet the time for the shining of the moon of Torah Shabbal Peh. So that's why the Pasuk emphasizes Moshe's sun is setting, the world of Torah Shabbosav is setting. Now we're going to have the reflected light, the light of Torah Shabbal Peh, the world of Yehoshua. And then in the later Pasuk, I'm just going to go back to the sheet one more second, show a couple, one more Pasuk. Vayava Moshe by Deber, says, Nei kol Derei Ashira Azos, Be'aznei Ha'am. This is the end of Sefer of Hazinu. After the song, so the Torah says that Moshe, right? Moshe came, once again, he's going around the people, and he taught the entire song to the people. Who the Hoshea bin Nun? So then it says, whoa, wait a second. First of all, why all of a sudden is Yehoshua involved in spreading this? And second of all, he's been Yehoshua the whole time. Why is he now being demoted to Hoshea bin Nun? Why are we going back to his roots? So the Netziv says, once again, this confirms the pattern we've been detecting. Moshe Rabbeinu's prophetic, right, the ability to spread, to be Marbitz Torah is ebbing. He is leaving the scene, literally. So now not only does he need to go back and forth like he did at the beginning of Vayelech, now he needs Yehoshua to do it with him. But Yehoshua is behaving not as an independent personality, as a future leader Yehoshua. He is acting in the capacity of Moshe Rabbeinu's student. One last time, he's Moshe as a sister. He is the Mishares Moshe, and therefore the Torah goes back and calls him Hoshea ben Nun, the name he had when he was originally sitting in, you know, Lo Yamesh Ritocha Ohel with Moshe Rabbeinu. And then, says the Netziv, is a beautiful image about the end of Sefer Devarim, because as Moshe has been leaving the scene, his power has been fading, Yeshua's powers are rising. We're making that transition to the world of Torah Shabbat. Says the Netziv, Vizos HaBracha, gives us one last burst of miraculous prophetic power from Moshe Rabbeinu. Vizos HaBracha, Moshe is not walking up and down. Moshe is not using Yeshua as an assistant. The Netziv develops he says, an analogy to this. If you have a candle, so as the candle gets to the bottom of its fuel, so we know that it begins to flicker, it begins to fade, the light gets more faint. But right before the candle goes out, as it hits the last reserves of fuel in the bottom of the cup, all of a sudden you'll see the flame will have a last shooting burst of light. Think back to the Chanukiah. All of a sudden the flame will like start to get very tall right before it goes out. And the Netziv says that's exactly what happens with Moshe Rabbeinu. All of Sefer Devarim is a Sefer of the transition from Torah Shabbosav to Torah Shabbat. It's a transition from the world of Moshe to the world of Yehoshua. That literally begins to occur at the end of the Sefer. And then we have one last great burst, Bezos HaBracha, where Moshe Rabbeinu gets up and just communicates directly and purely to Bnei Yisrael. The power of Nevuah is magnified. The level of Nevuah in terms of, this is Nevuah about the far distant future. And that's what we have at the end of Bezos HaBracha. So those are two ways of really conceptualizing the book, the Ramban, Mishneh Torah. It's a second Torah. There's repetition here. There are new mitzvos, which you need to explain why these new mitzvos are here. And the Ramban thinks they've been around the whole time. The Radvaz argues, so does the Netziv, by the way. Rav Hirsch defends the Ramban. You can look at Rav Hirsch and see how he develops the Ramban's theory a little bit more. And the Netziv is thinking about this as not repetition, but rather as going in depth, a commentary, and that this is the world of major transition. one last minute, I just want to make one last point about the Ramban, because the Ramban, I said, besides talking about the mitzvah, the halachic content of the Sefer, so he also talks about the historical element. We have that in Sefer in Parashat Devarim. And the Ramban asks, why do we have all of the depressing moments of Jewish history relived in Sefer Devarim? And the Ramban says, and there's a very powerful message here, says you have to have a different perspective on this. B'nai Yisrael, we know back in Parashat Shlach, we're worried about entering the land of Israel. Alachas kama v'kama, they're worried what's going to happen when Moshe Rabbeinu leaves the sea. Are they going to enjoy divine protection when they most need it and when it's most at risk? Because now they need it because they're entering the land, facing off all the major powers that we saw in with the Meraglim, and they're no longer going to do it with Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? It's a double whammy. We have new enemies, and we've lost our leader. So the B'nai Yisrael are extremely worried, and understandably so. Says the Ramban, that's why Moshe Rabbeinu keeps on going back to the mistakes we made along the way. To tell B'nai Yisrael, look, you'd have reason to worry if you were perfect until now, and then you're going to have your first ever sin with me not being around. He says, let's look at our history. One thing Hashem has documented very thoroughly over the course of my 40-year career, he's documented his midas harachamim. Because the way you guys have behaved for 40 years, you've made it necessary for Hashem to show his midas harachamim. So if we could go through a chet ha'egel, and Hashem forgave us and we're still standing here, and we can go through a chet ha'meraglim, and Hashem forgave us and we're still standing here, so be at ease, you should know you're going to enter the land and I'm not going to be around, but the bris is still going to stand. You still have the midas harachamim and Hashem will still have your back. Yes, says the Ramban, the people said, it's impossible not to sin. We're human. Moshe zinachanami, you're going to try your best. And by the way, I know you're going to fail. You know, the Netziv has an amazing comment towards the end of the Sefer. Moshe Rabbeinu spends all of Sefer Devarim panicking. Don't worship Avodah Zarah. Don't worship Avodah Zarah. I'm going to go to Eretz Yisrael, and this is my worst nightmare. You're going to lead. You're going to go into the land, and the Kananim are going to be there. You're going to worship Avodah Zarah. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. Like 50 times in Sefer Devarim is Moshe pushing B'nai Yisrael. Ignore the people. Ignore the Kananim. Don't fall into their ways. Don't worship their gods. Right? It's Moshe's nightmare. The end of the book, already in Vayelech, Hashem says to Moshe, black on white, here's what's going to happen. You're going to enter the land of Israel. Hinecha shochev mabosacha, says Hashem. You're going to die and the people are going to worship idols. It's going to happen. Moshe's nightmare. He knows the people well. It's going to come true. Hashem says it black on white, right? What you've spent the whole Sefer inveighing against. Don't do this. Don't do this. Hashem says, yeah, bad news. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. They're going to worship Avodah Zarah. So the Netziv comments on this. Why do, it's like pretty depressing note. He says, no, the point is exactly as the Ramban says in his introduction to the book. And it's just like the story of Rabbi Akiva when he's on Har Abayis and he sees the smoking ruins of the Beis HaMikdash. If Hashem says, I know the people are going to worship Avodah Zarah, and yet, even though I know that, Moshe Rabbeinu, you intuited that. I know that I'm telling you they're going to worship idols, and yet I'm bringing them into the land anyway. So what does it mean that I'm bringing them into the land even though I know they're going to mess up once they get there? And that's Hashem's way of telling B'nai Yisrael, Midas Harachamim is going to stand. Since I know you will sin, and yet, even in advance, right, there's like a down payment on the Midas Harachamim already now. So that is furthering the chizuk that B'nai Yisrael get, that Hashem is always going to be with us. And Chazal, I forget where, but some of Chazal points out that for all of the Musar that Moshe Rabbeinu gives us over the course of his whole career, what does he end with? What's the last pasuk, the last message that B'nai Yisrael ever get from Moshe Rabbeinu? It's right before he goes up to the mountain. Ashrecha Yisrael mikamocha, am noshab Hashem. Praiseworthy is Israel, the people who are defended by God. Magain ezrecha, the shield of your help. Asher charev agavasecha, Hashem is your shield, Hashem is your sword. Moshe's last message is one of hope and of strength. Hashem loves you. Ashrecha Yisrael, Hashem is your sword, Hashem is your sword, he's your shield. He has your back. I'm leaving the scene. We can lose a Moshe Rabbeinu, we can lose a Yehoshua, but with all the transition that's going to happen, we're never going to lose Ribbono Shel Olam. So I think that's a message which is great to have going into Tisha B'Av. And, you know, keep in mind, like, track this as we learn Sefer Tzvarim to look for different examples of it. I think there's a lot to it. So thanks, everyone, for learning this year, the weeks that I came. I really enjoyed it. And have a great summer, everybody.
You too. And can you send the sheet?
Yes, I'll do that right now. I'll send the source sheet right now.
Thank you.
Yeah. A good Shabbos.
A good Shabbos.
Good Shabbos.